Stop me if you've heard this one already, but no matter how hard you work, life seems to only get harder. In the new book, Monopolies Suck, antitrust expert and director of the Open Markets Institute, Sally Hubbard, shows us the ways big corporations rule our, the many ways that big corporations rule our lives, and what must be done to stop them. Hubbard says the U.S. failed to protect its citizens against COVID-19, and corporate mergers led to a shortage of ventilators and critical medical systems. While hospital monopolies underpaid vital healthcare workers, small businesses are shuttering without government support, while the most powerful companies profiteer. Hubbard says the economy is not working for the middle class, and monopolies are amplifying the systemic racism and misogyny that instigated a summer of protests and unrest. And that's just 2020. The name of the book is Monopolies Suck, and we welcome Sally Hubbard to the roundtable this morning. Sally, how are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me.
It's very nice to have you on the program. The book is quite remarkable. What brought you to kind of put it all together and just tell us how much monopolies suck?
Well, I've actually been working in the area of antitrust law for, almost 20 years now. And, you know, it's always been this kind of esoteric area that only economists and lawyers can understand. And I felt like people had a general sense that monopolies were not good and that things weren't going right. But there was a lack of understanding in how monopolies actually make everyone's lives harder on a daily basis. And so I was trying to kind of fill that gap in information so people could start relating to this problem on a personal level and hopefully create a citizen movement like the one that toppled Standard Oil back at the turn of the century.
As I just said, you know, reading in the introduction, we just kind of you've crystallized there what has happened over the past year, but obviously this has been something that you've been working on for a long time and has been happening for a long time. Is what in your thought, what allows it to go on unchecked and to make it only get worse as opposed to never tapping whatever it is on the shoulder and saying, okay, we need to slow down a little bit?
Well, we actually do have robust antitrust laws passed way back in 1898, and they were enforced through, you know, most of our nation's history pretty strongly. But what happened in the late 1970s, early 1980s, it was the arrival of the Chicago School of Economics and kind of also Reaganism at the same time with this belief that bigger is better, that if we allow companies to become large, then they become more efficient, and that ultimately that will benefit consumers in the form of lower prices. And this way of thinking really infected the courts. The court's decisions that have come out over the last 20, 30 years have really narrowed the antitrust laws. The statutes are quite broad themselves, but the laws made it really hard to prevail in an antitrust case. And as a result, we saw really weak enforcement from the antitrust enforcers and even from, you know, private lawyers that could bring cases under the antitrust laws. And so, you know, we've had this kind of 30-year experiment that we can now see is a complete failure. You know, all of this merging and anti-competitive behavior was permitted under the idea that consumers would benefit, the so-called consumer welfare standard. And actually, we can see now that consumers are not benefiting at all. Prices are higher than they've ever been in many industries. And, you know, then the other aspects of every consumer, they're also employees, they're also citizens, maybe they're entrepreneurs, maybe they're all taxpayers and citizens. All of those aspects of your humanity have been harmed in the name of this pursuit of consumer welfare.
So last month, the House announced that Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google had exercised and abused their monopoly power and called for the most sweeping changes to antitrust laws in half a century. You testified in front of the Judiciary Committee. So is even that, in your opinion, enough? And will it ever happen? Which is the immediate follow-up.
So the work that was done by the House Judiciary Antitrust Subcommittee was really quite remarkable and historic, and exactly what we want Congress to be doing for the American people. They spent 16 months investigating the tech platforms. They looked at millions of documents. They did, you know, hours of interviews with market participants. It was really an in-depth investigation, unlike a lot of kind of the, you know, Senate hearings that we see that kind of just seem like a lot of grandstanding and, you know, not lacking in substance. This was a really in-depth investigation into the industry that produced a 450-page report documenting anti-competitive behavior. And I think it's really historic and phenomenal and only the beginning, right? So we do need Congress to take up the recommendations that are in that report and pass the laws. We need antitrust enforcers to bring strong cases. We need a whole suite of, you know, solutions, including stronger privacy laws, anti-corruption laws. You know, there's kind of a whole suite of tools in the monopoly tool, anti-monopoly toolkit. But I do think this is just the beginning, and I was personally incredibly heartened by that, you know, historic action by the House.
How does a monopoly become a monopoly?
So, you know, it's actually not illegal to be a monopoly on its own. That's legal under the antitrust laws. What is illegal is to use exclusionary conduct to grow or maintain that monopoly power. And it turns out that most companies, when they become monopolies, if we have a functioning market, that should invite competition, right?
Right.
What we don't have right now in most of our economy, not just big tech, but, you know, big oil, big ag, big pharma, across the entire economy, we don't have functioning markets. And so it's very easy for, once a company has monopoly power, to start using its muscle to keep out other competitors, rather than competing based on merit to be the best. And now antitrust enforcement is what's supposed to stop that from happening. You know, the antitrust enforcers are supposed to bring cases to, you know, under Section 2 of the Sherman Act that prevents illegal monopolization. But that, you know, has just not been happening for the last, you know, 20, 30 years because of the weakening of the law and how hard it is to win those cases, and also because of a lack of political will on the part of enforcers who had kind of subscribed to the same ideology that bigger is better.
So in that bigger is better philosophy and the moving ahead that breaks the laws that do exist, is the primary motivation greed?
Yes. I don't, you know, think putting like human characteristics on corporations is actually the most helpful way to think about it. I think the most helpful thing to think about is the way that corporations are structured under current corporate law.
But why do they do it? I mean, there's a reason they do
it, right? Yes, profit maximizing. No, it's definitely profit maximizing.
Yep.
But so that is greed, right?
Yeah.
But we have to realize that corporations are going to behave like corporations. So I get really frustrated when people think the solution is to get corporations to be less greedy. What we really need to do is use the laws to both regulate corporations and make sure we have open markets so that they're challenged by competitors. That is a way of constraining corporations from causing their worst harms when, you know, consumers and other businesses have alternatives, then they're not able to be as abusive. So both regulation and competition are needed to constrain corporations, but corporations, by their nature and by the way the law is framed for corporate law, are profit maximizing. So I get really frustrated when people think we need to let them, make them be less greedy. No, what we need to do is actually regulate them and make sure we have competitive markets.
So how do we make the markets more competitive? That seems to be one of the issues that really exists. And so what do we do about that? Because this is a very, I know, overly simplistic way of describing it, but you see it, you sort of see it coming down the pike where somebody starts and you say, oh, good for them, and they're putting pressure on this place, and then 5 minutes later they're gobbled up by somebody else and you're back to square one.
Right. So that I've been talking mostly to you about anti-competitive conduct, but anti-competitive acquisitions are a huge part of the story, you know, anti-competitive mergers. So we need much stronger merger enforcement. We need enforcement against not just big acquisitions that are already of companies that are already really strong in the marketplace. But also one thing that's been very effective for most monopolies today is that they acquire companies when they're fresh and new. It's called nascent competitors, you know, kind of potential competitors or emerging competitors. They acquire them when they see the threat coming. And antitrust law has been really, and antitrust enforcers have been completely weak, nearly absent in going after those types of mergers. So those types of mergers need to be blocked as well. So we need much stronger merger enforcement. We need reforms to merger law. We need reforms to antitrust law. But also we do need to do the most extreme measure, which is breakups, because of the point that we've gotten now where we've allowed some corporations to become so massive that they control too many levers of competition and have too much ability to distort competition, that we can't actually just monitor their behavior going forward and sue. We do need to remove some of the conflicts of interest that exist for them to prioritize and give preference to their own products and services, particularly companies that control entire platforms and infrastructure that's essential for our economy.
Can you give us an example of a breakup that was successful that could perhaps be used as a model of how it should be done?
Well, probably the most recent successful breakups would be back when we broke up AT&T.
Yeah.
Also, they broke up Standard Oil. You know, these things have been far and few between. But, you know, when we broke up AT&T, it also involved a whole lot of regulation and requiring something called interoperability, which is really just making sure that new companies and smaller companies can be compatible with monopoly networks. And that's something that we certainly need to do regarding big tech, is kind of making sure that their platforms are compatible with other competitors. So interoperability is one of the ways that they dealt with the AT&T breakup. But we also saw a lot of new innovation that came out, when AT&T was broken up. And, you know, even when USC Microsoft, that case was about 20 years ago, it didn't actually get broken up because the Bush administration came in and took that remedy off the table. But we did see a lot of new innovation come forward as a result of USC Microsoft. And many people think that Google wouldn't even exist today if not for that antitrust case, because it stopped Microsoft from taking its monopoly power in the computer operating system and using that to take over everything that touched the operating system, including browsers and search engines.
So you break up the book, and as I mentioned, the seven ways in which monopolies suck and how they impact us. Can you give us a short example of how we, the average citizen, the average listener listening to us right now, is impacted? Because that was one of the things that really struck me in the book was how we don't perhaps always think about it, but how we are so deeply impacted by the monopolies and how they take over.
Right. So that's exactly what my goal in the book is, to help people understand that it does affect them. It's not just some lofty, you know, big thing in the background, but it makes all of our lives harder every single day, whether it's our high prices that we pay for basic needs like broadband, wireless networks, you know, food. There's been price fixing cases against all of the major proteins, all of the major meat industries have been sued for price fixing. And that is much easier to do when there's only two or three companies in an industry. So when I'm talking about monopolies in this book, I'm also talking about duopolies, where you have two companies rule an industry, and oligopolies, where you have three companies rule an industry or four. These are still not competitive, healthy markets. And it's very easy for them to conspire and set prices and gouge us all. There's also, obviously, everyone is really aware of how out of control healthcare costs are. And yes, there's a lot of reforms that are needed in our system, but people don't realize that there is rampant violation of the antitrust laws by drug companies, literally pay generic drug manufacturers to stay off the market, to keep those lower priced drugs off the market. And then a lot of the shortages that we're seeing today with COVID and how weak our supply chains are, that's because we've allowed everything to become so highly consolidated that there's only a few companies making every critical supply. This wouldn't be the case if we had deconcentrated economic power and manufacturing in our economy. The other thing I think people don't realize is that really affects your pay as an employee. When there are less companies that are competing to hire you, it's just like supply and demand in any other market. They can pay you less when they have less competition for your labor. Obviously, you have less bargaining power when there are fewer employers. And then if you want to be an entrepreneur instead, well, the opportunities for entrepreneurship are getting closed off as you have these huge companies extracting tolls from every small business. You know, any small business that wants to appear in Google search results has to pay thousands of dollars just to be show up in a search when someone searches under their business name. So it's basically the fact that every small business is paying these tolls, which are really just a form of taxes, of private taxes, just to reach market. And then, of course, there's also the difficulty of getting funded for any kind of a venture when, you know, there's a monopoly that is operating in that area. No venture capitalists will fund what they call kill zones around big monopolies. I won't go on anymore, but obviously it affects you as a citizen, as we're seeing monopolies affect the election. It affects you as a taxpayer when monopolies don't pay their fair share of taxes. That means you pay more and get crappy infrastructure. I just really encourage people to think of all the different capacities besides just as a consumer, although in many ways monopolies are harming you as a consumer as well.
We have about 2 minutes left, and I just want to ask you about, we started the conversation talking about the House and that legislation and that you were encouraged by it. What are your feelings on what you have heard from during the campaign from President-elect Biden on this issue?
Biden hasn't been very vocal about where he stands on the monopoly issue. There is a bit of uncertainty there. I do think that this movement is not something he's going, the anti-monopoly movement is not something he's going to be able to ignore, particularly as he faces pressure, not just to unite America, but to unite the Democratic Party. And I do think that anti-monopoly is a way to unite America, because really, every American is getting screwed every day by monopolies. It's actually one of the very few issues that is bipartisan. You know, we have 51 states right now, states and territories investigating Google on a bipartisan basis. That's so rare these days. So I think it's an important issue both to unite the Democratic Party and to unite America and to start really making people's lives better. Because it's a foundational structural issue, unless he deals with monopoly power, he's not going to succeed in a bunch of the other areas that he wants to, including in addressing the climate crisis.
And of course, one of the things when you were talking about supply chains and as you talk about this, I mean, everything is so fragile. I think one of the things that I learned during COVID is just how fragile all this is.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, a concentrated economy is a fragile economy, okay? It's putting all of our eggs in one basket. It's also a big theme of my book is about how the new Gilded Age is a result of this monopolization. And the concentration of economic and political power in a country ruled by monopolies doesn't make equality possible, right? It's an extractive business model that's ruling every sector of our economy and taking from regular people. So we have a taking economy instead of a making economy. So that's just a very important issue that, you know, I think we really need to address if we're to get a more resilient economy that is allows for shared prosperity and also a more stable democracy.
So are you optimistic?
I am optimistic. I think these problems are so bad that we don't have a choice but to fix them. I don't think we're on a sustainable course. I think we need a course correct. I think it's going to happen. It's just a question of when, how long it will take. I'm doing everything I can to make it happen sooner rather than later. But I do think change is inevitable and necessary, you know, for very critical things like preserving our democracy and fighting the climate crisis.
The name of the new book is Monopolies Suck. It is by Sally Hubbard. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Sally, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Monopolies Suck. It is by Sally Hubbard and published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.